afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Thursday, May 25th, 2017. Normally, we have James Corbett joining Al for Thursday's program, but there was a little technical problems last night, so... So we were unable to do that, so I'd like to, so you're stuck with Alfred and myself for the Thursday afternoon hour. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Gold today, it tried to manage a little bit to the upside, but struggled all day long. We have gold currently down 270 for gold at 1,257. You have silver down 11 at 1722. We have platinum down 1 at 953. Palladium was up. It's interesting. Palladium was up today, up 4 at 773. It's kind of working the opposite of the other three precious metals. You have the USDX today up 0.14 at 97.21. Crude oil took a beating today, down 2.91, dropped way below the 50 at 48.45. The Dow up 70 points at 21,082. You have the NASDAQ up 42 at 6205, and the S&P up 10 at 2415. Where's the euro? The euro is 112, down 0.07. The 10-year yield is 2.26%. So, there you go, folks. And again, as I said, every holiday, every G7 meeting, pressure on gold, a little pressure on gold. We'll have high stock market prices for the celebration into the holiday, because as people travel and go on vacation, they want to make sure that everybody is spending. So, and spreading the good word, the good cheer that the stock markets and everybody is making all kinds of money. So, I'm glad they are.
It's not just that they are, but they always will.
That they always
will. Never go down.
Well, there's a lot of more war talk in the news again today. The Iranian president comes out today, says we need missiles to confront Trump administration enemies. The re-elected Iranian president, Rouhani, he lashed out at the Trump administration this week. He's getting in on the game along with the Democrats, describing it as an ignorant and saying that Iran needs missiles to confront the United States, its allies, according to recent remarks. And of course, this is just days after President Trump has blasted the Islamic Republic for its illicit ballistic missile program and support of terrorism in the Middle East. Yeah, as Mr. Trump visits the Saudi Arabias, and they're they're the biggest supporters of terrorism. You know, it's just kind of funny if it wasn't so dangerous and deadly. But Rouhani confirmed that Iran would not cease its missile activity despite repeated calls by U.S. officials. We need missiles, and the enemy should know that we make everything we need, and we don't pay an iota. It's hard to believe that the president of Rouhani would actually use iota of attention of your words, he said, was quoted as Wednesday, saying on Wednesday during a meeting with Iranian cabinets. The remarks by the enemies of the Iranian nation against Iran's missile power are out of ignorance. So that I can imagine him saying. But this goes in tune with Iran is building a third underground ballistic missile production factory. It's going to keep developing its missile program. And it's, you know, it's going to continue to fuel the tensions between them and us. And
I'm fascinated that Iran makes everything it needs for its own missiles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't make everything we need for our own fighter jets.
True.
I don't know. And there's a point there. If Iran is capable of generating everything it needs to make intercontinental ballistic missiles, why do we need to outsource any of our industries to other countries? They can do it. Why can't we?
Well, you know what? We need that outsourcing. I have found an article that we're going to talk about a little bit today, and it was interesting because it was out of London. And, you know, we'll probably get to it after the first break. And it was interesting because, you know, they're talking about the next financial crisis could be in the Forex. And it's like everyone is expecting a financial crisis of some sort. I mean, anyone with any intelligence is just waiting and knows that we're going to have a major global financial crisis. No one wants to talk about it. They don't want to ruin a good thing. So, you know, they keep their mouths shut and, you know, it's business as usual. And this comes out of London, out of Reuters, and it talks about the currency problem. And there's a lot of information, there's comments in this that we already know about the U.S. dollar being the reserve. All we need is someone, you know, big like China, get a little ticked off. And, you know, they'll start, you know, selling their dollars and so forth. And, you know, here comes the unraveling of the great U.S. dollar reserve currency story. So it was interesting because he references some old economists back in, from 1752, and the trade, we see the deficits, and because it's not backed by gold anymore, when they used to trade globally, it was paid for with gold, so it worked. That was a true free market. So today, when we talk about the debt, that they have to continue to have debt, well, they have to continue to have global trade. We need the deficits in the trade. And it's like the two are supporting each other. And it was kind of interesting because then I'm thinking, well, how can we fix our deficits in the trade? How can we bring back jobs into this country? And it's like, we can't. Or we're going to have the unwinding of the U.S. dollar. So, I mean, and that is eventually going to happen. And so, I don't know, I just thought it was an interesting little coming out of London. And, I mean, it isn't a news story as far as, you know, the U.S. dollar, you know, is going to lose its spot as the reserve currency. We all know that's coming. And so, with this article coming from London, you know what, maybe it's going to be here sooner than later, especially with if tensions arise out of North Korea and maybe China's not doing what they're supposed to be, and you know, Taiwan simulates attacks, and I mean, you have all of this heating up in the South, you know, China Seas, and you know, as U.S. warships challenges the Beijing's claim, you know, all it takes is something little like that, that all of a sudden you have someone that has a huge amount of holdings in U.S. dollars to start selling, and it just totally unravels anything. But until that happens, and I mean, somebody could just wake up on a bad day. They could have a bad headache that day. And, you know, I mean, that's how fragile the world monetary system is.
And it is the world monetary system we're talking about. You know, if the dollar goes down, we can sit back and say and suppose that China might get some, you know, pleasure or advantage out of the dollar going down. But if the dollar goes down, the whole debt-based monetary system of the world goes down.
Absolutely.
And everybody gets hurt. There will be nobody just standing around and say, yippee. There'll be no nation standing around and saying, yippee, we finally got rid of that that debt-based monetary system. Everyone will pay a price on that. And in my opinion, the only people that will do well will be individuals who have actually stacked up some gold.
Absolutely.
Because it will be in anticipation. I think it seems to me that if and when the U.S. dollar, a debt-based monetary system, if and when that collapses, it seems inevitable to me that people are going to want an asset-based monetary system. They may not want it instantly. They may be able to foist off another debt-based monetary system on us and run it with special drawing rights from the IMF or something like that.
No,
but
they
it'll last.
No, they need gold.
It's going back to gold. Whether
it's
the first thing that happens or the second, I don't know, but it's going back to gold.
And that's what this article talks about. And you know, I didn't want to get into it in this segment. I wanted to wait till we, you know, didn't have to cut it short. But that's what they talked about. They talked about, like, you know, for decades, they've been, you know, various governments and central banks have been trying to figure out, you know, what can they do? You know, how can they prevent, you know, this from happening, and trying to emerge some sort of a global currency and so forth, and they continue to fail and they don't have answers. Well, that's because they're not using gold. They're not using gold in the equation. So everything that they come up with is not going to work. And they're not going to bring gold into that equation until they have
it's
to.
Anathema.
They can't bring it in now until it collapses. Once the U.S. dollar ceases to be the reserve currency, then they can bring in gold. And as I said, for years and years and years, they're going to have a basket of currencies for trade. They used to have a gold trade unit. So if they're not going to have a trade unit made out of gold, they will throw a percentage of gold into the basket of currencies, and it'll stabilize these currencies. And that's what gold did many, many years ago in the 1700s, when you had countries that traded globally. And of course, the degree, but all things are relative. It's still the same. So it was, I'd like to, go a little more into details on that, after
we've got 7 minutes till the break.
After the break. What's a little more lengthy than that? We can talk a little bit about, I saw where the Senate Republicans are weighing a two-step process to replace Obamacare that would postpone a repeal until 2020. As they're seeking to draft a more modest version of the House plan. Well, we knew if it got there, that's what they were going to do. They were going to cut and paste a new version of what was passed in the House. But now they're looking that they would try to postpone the repeal until 2020, so that they are in stages of private talks. They're going to try and first take action to stabilize the premium costs in the exchanges in both 2018 and 2019. Senate plan is likely to continue the subsidies that help the low-income Americans with co-pays and deductibles. White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney said, I wish they'd get back to names like Smith and Jones. Mick Mulvaney said Thursday the administration hasn't committed to paying subsidies due in June. So we're not sure what that's going to happen if they don't pay those subsidies. There might be some short-term solutions, but,
they have a real solution, or will they just have a short-term pretext that looks like maybe it sounds like it might work and then doesn't? And one of the questions about this is, if they keep diddling around with this, oh, we are not going to cancel Obamacare until 2020. All right, maybe that's true. 4 years, basically, is what they're talking about. What do you think is going to happen to medical care over the next 4 years while they're hemming and hawing on whether to terminate Obamacare or not? Will health care become higher quality, or will it become increasingly risky and hard to reach? It's just one of these things where if the government can't screw something up, there's something really wrong with government. Virtually everything they touch that's big, they manage to make a botch of it, right? And perhaps the biggest reason is they want to play Superman, and they're going to vote for me, and I'm going to give you a free lunch. And a lot of people want that free lunch. But when they take the free lunch, they have to sacrifice not only their freedom, but they have to sacrifice their independence. And the one nice thing about the free lunch is you have to sacrifice your sense of responsibility. You don't have to provide for yourself. Huh? You can go out and wait for somebody else to give you a handout. And I'm not just talking about the poor people here. I mean, we have as many subsidies, so far as I can understand, for the rich as we do for the poor. And it's up to the middle class, who is disappearing, to pay for it. We support the rich, we support the poor, right? We support illegal aliens, we support people coming into this country who are looking to destroy this country. It's troubling, it's irritating, it's infuriating. You look at it, and it's like being caught in flypaper, where you can't seem to get away from this. We are caught in a system of ideas right now that make a lot of our troubles inevitable, and we're not going to change until we really go back and we recalibrate our own cultural values. and we decide what we're going to be and who we want to be and whether we want to be, we all want to be on welfare. And it may come to that. Where the robots are coming and the rest of it, who knows? We may all be on welfare before this is all over, and we'll all have the same amount of money. And then what will happen? You know, the people who live on welfare right now don't live badly if you speak in terms of a world scale. But because they basically all have the same thing, in my opinion, it is conducive to more violence. You know, we can compete with each other by who has the newest car, who has the slickest fishing boat, who's taken the most vacations. It's a way of competing. And competition is built into our species the same way it's built into a couple of stags, deer, that are fighting each other to get at the females. There is an inherent need to compete, and when you can't compete because everybody's got the same amount of money, how are we going to compete? And my guess is we'll go back to something as violent as the hood.
I don't know if competition, I mean, because isn't that really more environment? Because you look at the schools today, there's no winners or losers anymore. They've taken away the need to compete to some degree. Even in your schools, everybody's equal.
How's it
everybody's
working
the
out?
Same. And no, I agree with you. I mean, it's not, but I mean, it's. I don't think it's, you know, it's in our nature. I think it's something that we've been grown, you know, because when, you know, by our parents and previous generations, that's what we were taught. You know, women
it's
were
not
taught
just what
to,
we were taught. Well, we're taught the means of
and they're
communication
now they're unteaching
or competition.
It. They're unteaching it.
Well, we could compete on the basis of football. We could compete on the basis of basketball. We can compete on the basis of who's buying the newest car or the biggest house. There's different ways that we compete in any society on the face of the earth, but I suspect that we do compete. We must compete. And when we are all given a material equality, I suspect that our competition is going to have to go to something violent or maybe something self-destructive. Maybe like how much crack can you consume? How much beer can you drink?
I don't know, but there's
something that just it's disturbing to me. I might be mistaken. I might be right. I don't know. But it looks to me we need to compete. When we get to equality, it goes to violence.
I don't think it's the need to compete. I think it's the need for greed that makes us compete.
Yeah, well, why do you need?
I mean, and then, you know, we want the money. I mean, that's you know, you want a better life. You want a better life. No, you want a better life. You know, a nicer roof, and you know, a little bit easier to eat. You know, to you know, where it's provide for your family.
Yeah, but you got to show off to your brother-in-law, Melody. It's a basic fact of life. You got to show him that you have a bigger car than he does. Natural, human nature. Let's take a break for some commercials, and we will be back to the financial survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just wanted to mention, did you see that disagreement or the body slamming or hear the report of the Montana Republican that was running for U.S. Congress? He's been charged with assaulting a reporter just before the polls were open. For a special election.
These politicians will do anything to get more votes.
Well, the incident, what happened was a reporter, he was in a, and I, you know, they're both at fault. You know, I don't think he should have been charged with, you know, assault. They were both at fault. But he was in a private room doing an interview with a local TV station, and a reporter from The Guardian just made his way in. He wasn't invited. And he sticks a microphone in the guy's face. I guess it was a phone, an audio recording device of some sort. He sticks the recording device in the politician's face, Greg Guillen. I'm not quite sure of how to pronounce his name. I'll just call him Greg. He told him to remove it out of his face. The guy didn't do it. He kept asking him a question. And the next thing, you know, I guess he went to grab for the phone. And I guess the reporter grabbed his wrist. The next thing you know, they're on the floor. And, you know, the politician, Gianforte, was charged with misdemeanor assault after a political correspondent for the Guardian newspaper had body slammed him. And, I mean, it's like, you know, that was kind of interesting.
I think it's interesting because it's going to be interesting to me
to
see how this plays in the polls. Yeah. I mean, journalists are not the most respected profession in the world right now, and a politician who gets accused of assaulting a journalist, this is a little bit of a man bites dog story. It might be that he's going to see an uptick in the polls. So it'll be interesting to see who's the favorite.
All the newspapers dumped him, of course, but he was favored in the state to win. So we'll have to see how that election goes today. It was today. I haven't seen any comments or I haven't seen any numbers to see where it's at. But yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah.
The greatest show on earth, Melody. It's still here. You know, I'm going to change my name to Barnum. All right? You can change your name to Bailey and we can run for Congress.
I can remember a couple of years ago over in London in their parliament, one guy, you know, I think it was London in their parliament, got up and, you know, decked the other guy in there.
You've seen it. Yeah, we've seen it in, I don't know, Japan, I think, yeah. Periodically.
So, you know, it's like...
Actually, it's pretty funny, these politicians. I don't know.
I can't believe they actually charged them, you know, but but hey, you know what? If someone sticks something in my face and you're not supposed to be there, yeah, I'd probably deck the guy too. Like, get out of here. We didn't invite you. But I guess you would assume that a politician would have a little more, you know, reserve. You know. But
not
hey,
Montana.
It's Montana, where men are men.
That's exactly right. I'm trying to tell you about this competition thing, Melody. You understand?
I don't think that was actual competition, but
it's competition.
Get out.
Down at the core, it's competition. You insert that mic anywhere close to me, and you're competing in my space now.
It's not competition.
And that means we got to go.
It's not competition. It's testosterone.
Same thing. Same thing.
Anyway, I want to get back, and if there's any news. Current news or anything you want to talk about before I get into this little article again we were talking about prior to, let me know, Al.
Go ahead.
But I was telling you during the break that this article, again, was from London, and it talks about the expansion of globalization has not made currency problems any less pressing. This dilemma was actually identified by economist Robert Triffin. He's a more modern economist, but he says that the reminder that a worldwide foreign exchange crisis is only one big mood change away. And he talks about a Scottish philosopher and economist, David Hume, and he identified the fundamental issue in 1752. While the sum of global exports always equals global imports, countries can run persistent trade deficits. In his time, 1752, the deficit country shipped gold to pay for overseas goods. Today, creditors have to accept large quantities of deficit countries' currencies. Hume thought that the free market would correct these imbalances through what we now call currency devaluations. Exports would rise, imports would fall, and the gold would return. But it turns out that the economic patterns which lead to trade deficits are remarkably stubborn. They persist as long as importers can find a way to pay for their lifestyles. So when the gold runs out or the lenders finally give up, default is almost unavoidable. And I think this is what we're seeing in today's world. Usually, such national financial failures cause only small ripples in the world economy, but that is not always the case. As the economist Triffin pointed out in 1960, the effects would be much more serious if creditors lose faith in the global reserve currency. Now, this is 1960. The unit, which is readily accepted for trade and commonly used for savings pretty much everywhere. It's all based on faith and confidence. It's U.S. dollar. So if you have a flight from a reserve currency, and we talk about that all the time in this program for years, you hear it in other places where they talk about a flight from the reserve currency, it's going to throw the global trading system into disarray. As in Triffin's day, the currency in question is the U.S. dollar. As the Belgian-American economists understood, the dollar will remain solid until the day of reckoning. It might remain solid, but still those dollars loses its value. And again, if you're holding gold, it's going to protect your purchasing power while this is going on. Foreigners will be willing to accumulate more greenbacks because holdings of the global reserve currency help trade run smoothly. So, hey, they are more than happy to finance America's trade deficit. But the more the United States spreads dollars around the world, the more likely holders are to question America's creditworthiness. Economists name this simultaneous desire for dollars and danger involved in holding them the Triffin dilemma. So, you know, you have these, you know, people that want to hold the dollars. They see the danger involved. The French finance minister called it America's exorbitant privilege. So the United States has exercised its privilege abundantly ever since. The market value of dollars invested from America minus the value of dollars lent to it first turned negative back in 1988. After some gyrations, a firm trend has set in, and by 2016, now the deficit has reached around 11% of global GDP, and that's an awful lot of dollar value at risk. But the development is not surprising. You have cross-border trade that has increased from 17% of world GDP in 1960 to 45% today. And that's according to the World Bank. So the first horn of the Triffin dilemma explains that this growth leads to more expatriate dollars. How many of those dollars do we talk about all the time that's sitting overseas? The other horn points out that a currency crisis now would be very disruptive. Well, I think it's a little more than just very disruptive.
Disruptive.
Yeah.
It's like taking a bullet in the brain. It's disruptive. No, it's a little more, it's a little bit of an understatement.
Now, just remember that this is still coming from Reuters. He is a Reuters reporter. So, you know, it's, you know, so you can take this and multiply that.
Send them to Montana. They'll straighten them out.
Yeah. But, you know, and he talks about what if, and I'm sure he's referencing Trump, suppose some American irresponsibility or arrogance exhausts the patience of the Chinese government, prompting it to sell some of its vast stock of dollar-denominated assets. That's not new. We've talked about that all the time. That's all they'd have to do. It's the weapons of mass destruction.
I don't know if it really is, tell you the truth. They've only got $1.2, $1.5 trillion.
It doesn't matter, Al. It's the after effect. That's just the first domino. It's everything else because we're so intertwined. That's when it comes undone. You know, then you create other, you know, others would follow. Yeah, you'd have other people following, rushing to currencies still perceived as relatively safe. So that creates political discontent in other countries like Japan and Switzerland. So your capital controls would come and cross-border trade would go. So, no, it's a big deal. Even if you think $1 trillion isn't much, it probably
not
happened
these days.
Yeah. But still, you have that, because we're talking about this whole global financial system, monetary system, and they've all backed it up to keep it going.
Oh, I know.
And that's the problem.
I understand.
So there's been decades of debate about a possible globe currency, and it's produced nothing. China, if you, anybody remembers, tried to push to internationalize their currency. That kind of has gone in reverse. And again, the reason these debates have produced nothing is they're not using gold as part of the equation. And until they are forced to use gold.
I think the problem, it's not just a question of including gold in the equation. I think the equations are mutually exclusive. I think when you get into a debt-based monetary system, you have to operate on a completely different set of premises than if you have an asset-based monetary system. It's not as if you can, it's not like changing from where you're wearing a blue suit to where you're wearing a brown suit. This is different. This is different in kind, different in color or superficial attributes where, well, we could use gold or we could use corn cobs or we could use a debt-based. No, this debt-based monetary system creates different fundamental consequences, and I don't think it operates according to the same principles that were apparent and discovered by economists while we still had an asset-based, gold-based global monetary system. That's one set of principles. We got another set of principles. I don't think, and people are trying to apply the gold principles to the debt base, and I don't think it works.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, Al, I don't believe we're going to go back in time to where we'll go to 100% gold. No, it's not going to go there. Not with technology, not in the modern world.
Yeah, but let me tell you something that's interesting. We don't need to necessarily go back to 100%.
That's what I'm saying. So it would be a portion.
Well, just let me give you a little evidence for it. People look back and they say that the dollar has lost 96-97% of its value since 1913-14, whenever the Federal Reserve came into being. Well, technically that's true, but virtually all of the gold's all of the dollar's value has been lost since 1971. Yeah, it's 96-97% since 1913-1914, but it's technically about 96% from 1971. We didn't have gold in this country. Our currency was no longer backed by gold in 1971. Our currency was no longer backed by silver, but it was backed by gold on an international level. People in foreign countries could redeem their dollars for gold from the U.S. Treasury. That was enough to hold the value of the dollar fairly stable. But once we completely severed that link to gold, then the value of the dollar began to crash, and in the last 45 years or thereabouts, it's lost 96% of its purchasing power as compared to gold. The point to this is we didn't have to have gold back in our domestic dollar. We didn't have to have gold backing our or silver backing our domestic dollar. As long as gold was backing any of our dollars, any place, it was enough to hold the dollar together. But since we went off that gold standard, completely severed the link to gold, that's when 96% of its value disappeared. And that's telling us something important. We could go back to gold maybe on a road somehow, and I can't give you, I can just speculate on this, but we could go back where gold backed some of the dollars. And I don't know how you're going to set that up, but it doesn't necessarily have to back them all, but it has to back some of them. And if it does, then all of a sudden, maybe things are pretty reasonable again.
And that's exactly why I believe they will have to address the problem with the basket of currencies. They need to take away the ability to manipulate and to provide value, just as what you explained. And they can do that with the basket of currencies. And, you know, we talked about the things that have been going on when, you know, when the dollar has lost about 95% of its value. Maybe they only have to throw and balance that basket of currencies by 5%.
maybe.
Which is really a big deal. It's a lot of gold when you're talking about.
I understand, and if they did, the price of gold would have to go up dramatically.
Dramatically.
They're not going to try to balance the. They're going to have to come back with some gold someplace, and they're not going to be able to do it at the rate of $1,200 or $1,300 per ounce. They're going to have a big increase in the price of gold and say, from here on, these new dollars, these new global dollars are going to be backed by gold, at least by 5%, 10%, whatever it is. But the gold is going to be priced at who knows what. But it won't be down in terms of four figures. It'll be in terms of five figures. It'll be in terms maybe even six. Some people think. I mean, I've heard John Williams say $100,000 an ounce gold is not impossible. And John Williams is a credible economist, right? Now, he's not predicting that. He wasn't predicting it, but he clearly said it was conceivable that it could be that way. And that's what might be required to hold a system like this together. We can go back to gold. You know, some people say there's not enough gold. You know, we can't have a gold-based system because there's not enough gold. We can have a gold. There's plenty of gold. It just depends on the price. We could price a gram of gold at $10,000. There's no reason why it can't be done. It's absolutely possible. A gram of gold. We could put it in little plastic containers and make them the size of a quarter. All right, or maybe who knows, a half dollar or whatever. But we put a gram of gold and that's 10 grand. You could carry them around in your pocket. You got $10,000 worth of gold in your pocket. It is entirely possible. It just depends on the price. There's not enough gold at $1,000, $1,200, $1,300 an ounce. No, there's not enough gold at that price. But there's plenty at $100,000 an ounce. And I'm inclined to believe that sooner, when this thing goes down, when the debt-based system finally falls on its face, as it must, just don't know when, but as it must, when that finally happens, we are going to be drawn back to some sort of an asset-based monetary system, which almost certainly means gold and or silver. And when we get there, the price must be up dramatically. And if you can hang on to your gold, hang on to your silver until that moment, I believe you're going to be happy camper. So.
Well, I just wanted to finish this real quick. We've seen the change. We have President Donald Trump. He does not generally behave like a believer in cross-border solidarity. You have the Eurozone is becoming more inward-looking. China is becoming larger, more nationalistic. Japan is becoming smaller. So these are all the problems that will affect all the trade. And so the U.S. And I hear the music.
Say no to the voices and say no to the music.
Say yes to the music.
Say yes to the music. Okay, I stand corrected. All right, we'll take a break. Couple commercials. Be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Get out of that paper dollar, folks. It's coming. We just don't know when it's going to happen, and no one does. People suggest, people make predictions, and the predictions are always wrong. Half these people who make these predictions, you know, they just want to trade you. You know, they're Wall Streeters, they're traders, they're paper traders. They don't get the big picture. You know, so folks, protect yourself, convert those paper dollars into gold and silver. And because I do believe it's a lot closer. I believe it's a lot closer. Than I think
like
any of us
realize.
Like
being in one of those movies in the haunted house, and it's just dun, 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 dun. And the music keeps getting louder and louder, and you know a creature is going to show up any minute now.
Any minute.
But the music just keeps getting louder, and you have to wonder how loud can this stuff go before the creature finally shows up.
It's all an illusion.
The creature's not an illusion. The creature's there.
The illusion is that things
reality.
Are...
It's called reality, and it's something that not many people want to contend with. Oh, my God, it's a monster. No, it's reality. You understand? There's the problem. We can deal with monsters. We can deal with fictional monsters, and that's all right. It's reality. That's the problem, and for most people. Yeah. And we are going to be forced to embrace reality, and we are not likely to enjoy you know, the change. Oh, my
but
God,
was,
I have
but
to
it,
work for a living. This is terrible.
Well, there isn't going to be any jobs for people to work.
Yeah, there'll be something.
Oh, well, not for the
it
amount
might be
of
just
people.
Mugging people. You might have to go out and mug people. I don't know what you're going to have to do, but you're going to have to do something because I doubt that government, you know, where will government get the money for the handouts? And I know that it could. It could get the money from whatever corporations or businesses are selling products, they can tax them enough to get enough money to actually give to the people and make the people ingratiated to the government. Say, oh, thank you. You've saved me, Mr. President. You saved me. Yeah. It's possible, but there's still a... I don't see how anybody gets ahead in this system. Yeah, they can tax the corporations enough, but you're going to give some of that money to the people. And what are the people going to do? Presumably buy some of the corporations' products. But the government's going to take its cut. All right? We're going to tax a corporation $100,000, and we're going to give, and the government's going to want $50,000 for itself, and then we give $50,000 to the people to keep buying stuff from the corporation. And because the government's intruding in that. In that equation, they're in there. They don't produce anything, but they want to buy stuff from the corporation too. I don't know how the corporation can. I'm not sure that the corporation can continue to stay in business. We'll watch and see. Maybe they can figure a way to do it, but I think we are off in a world, and I'm not isolated in this opinion. I mean, you read anyone who's writing about the economy right now or talking about it, they basically all believe that it is behaving in a way that is irrational. It's crazy. It's insane. They may have different words for it. It's inexplicable, perhaps. It's, you know, confusing. It's bewildering. But something is wrong, and I don't think you can find anyone who is not running for public office that will disagree with that opinion. People in public office, they might want to tell you, oh, it's all okay. Don't worry about it. Just go home and watch TV. Everything's all right. But most people who are really looking at this as private individuals say, wait a second, this is trouble. And now we just have to wait. Now we're waiting. You know, when does the creature show up? And when it does, there's going to be heck to pay.
What's next, Al?
I got an article here from 24H Gold. And then the headline is gold and silver bullion now treated as money in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And we're talking earlier in the program about how the system is ultimately going to have to go back to gold and silver. In my opinion, right? We think it's going to have to go back. We can't continue a debt-based monetary system. And debt-based means it's all based on promises. When you have a debt-based monetary system, it's all based on what debt. What is a debt? It's nothing but a promise to pay. I owe you $100,000. I promise to pay next week, next month, next year. You've got a piece of paper with my signature on it that says, Al owes Joe Smith $100,000, and Al promises to pay. And they're treating that as if it were collateral for making loans out of a bank. They're treating it as if it were an asset, but it's not. An asset is something like a gold coin. It's not a promised gold coin. It's not an imaginary gold coin. It's not a paper gold coin. It is real, tangible, physical gold that you can hold in your hand. And that means it's not a function of promises. I promise to pay you next week, next month, 10 years from now, 30 years from now. Gold is not in your hand, is not about a promise of the future, which no one can really predict. We don't know what's going on in the future, and we don't know what's going to happen to all these promises to pay all of these debt instruments, right? But you get a piece of gold, hold it in your hand, and guess what? That is evidence of people who have made the effort. They've already made the effort to dig the ore out of the ground, to smelt it, refine it, stamp it into coins, and have sufficient discipline to actually save some of their wealth and convert it into that gold, into that gold coin. This is evidence of productivity that is a fact. It's evidence of discipline that is a fact. And it's right there. It's all there inherent in that ounce of gold holding in that gold coin. It's not a promise. Promise is just a piece of paper. It's all subjective. The gold represents past productivity, past discipline. This is a fact. This is real. It's not a promise. Promise is like going to Disney World, Disneyland, fantasy world, you know. Promise you're going to, you know, a pony that you're going to get for Christmas. The gold is a real deal, and it represents the past, and it's a real asset. It is an asset. It is something you look at and say, okay, yeah, somebody actually dug this out of the ground. This is real. The promises are just subjective. Sooner or later, the mass of promises, which is all debts are promises. The promises are too great to be kept. Everyone who looks at this knows this. Nobody's arguing that the national debt can be paid in full. Nobody's arguing that. They don't want to talk about it. They'll try to pay the interest on the debt and say, well, it could be paid. It may be somehow. No, it's not. It's never going to be repaid. And sooner or later, that understanding is going to penetrate the minds of virtually everyone in the country, and they're going to say, oh my gosh, all of these, there's too many promises to be kept. We've made more promises than we can possibly keep. It's like entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare. All of these are promises. This is unfunded liabilities, unfunded debts. They made these promises. The promises can't be kept. And everyone who looks into it understands that to greater or lesser degree, which means sooner or later, they're going to have to admit, oh my gosh, we can't keep all the promises. What does that mean to someone who is relying on Obamacare or Medicare or Medicaid or whatever? It means they're in trouble. What does it mean to people who have U.S. bonds that they have stored in a bank vault that they're using as collateral to make loans to the public? They're in trouble. What's it mean to the people who have bonds in pension funds that are being used to provide for their retirement? It means they're in big trouble. What's it mean to the people who are holding these pieces of paper, which are nothing? If it's a piece of paper, it's nothing but a promise to pay. That's all it is. It's a promise. All right? That's it. And they're holding them in their safety deposit boxes as evidence of their wealth that they're going to use when they retire or whatever. They're going to find out that at least half of those pieces of paper are worthless, and more than likely it'll be 80 to 90% of them. And that means 80 to 90%, at least half and probably 80 to 90% of their paper wealth is going to disappear. Bye-bye. Now what? This is the basic theme that we try, at least one of them that we try to advance on this program. It's telling you, look, you got this is going to happen. We just don't know when. So is it going to happen next week? No, I'm not going to argue that. Is it going to happen before the end of this year? I don't know. Could it happen next year? Yeah. Could it happen 5 years from now? Could be. But if you were setting investments aside and you were saying, this is not simply to make a fast buck. I'm not speculating. I'm investing, and I'm investing for 5 years out. I'm putting away this money. I'm saving this for my retirement in 15 years. All right? Or at least 5 years out. Now, what do you want? Do you want another piece of paper where somebody promises, cross their heart and hope to die, that they were going to repay you? You give them your energy, you give them your effort, your productivity, and they give you some piece of paper in return, and they promise that someday they'll pay off on that? Is that what you want for a future investment? Or would it make more sense to get something tangible? Not a promise, but a payment. Not a promise to pay, a payment. Gold is a payment, not a promise to pay. Payment, payment. What do you want for 5 years from now? 3 years from now? 10 years from now? If you're investing with your mindset of saying, I'm investing for where I'm going to be in 10 years, do you really want more paper promises? And that's bonds, stocks, pension funds, you know, Social Security. All of this is nothing but promises to pay. Do you want to trust your life to promises, or do you want to invest in your future in a way that says, here, I have a stack of payments. I have been paid, not promised to be paid, paid, paid. Well, in my opinion, if you can get hold of those payments, you're going to be glad you did, although I can't tell you how long it'll be before you are cheering, right? But increasingly, it doesn't look like it's going to be all that long. Can anyone, how many people think we can hold this together for another 2 years? If you stop to think about it, I wonder how many people are listening to this program right now who think we can hold this system together for two more years. It could be done. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'll make you a bet that 70, 80% of the people listening to this program, when you stop to think about it, do you really think they can hold it together for another 2 years? And I'd bet 70, 80% of you are saying, I don't think so. It's not impossible. They could do it. But I don't think so. How about 5 years? How about 10 years? Is there anybody listening to this program who thinks they can hold the system together for another 10 years? I can't imagine there's anybody who's listening to the program would even imagine 10 years. Nah, that ain't going to happen. So if you're trying to save something to take care of you after, whenever the stuff hits the fan, you know, my suggestion is you get a payment, get paid for your work, your energy, your effort, your productivity. All they gave you was paper. You worked, you invested your life into one thing or another, but all they gave you were pieces of paper. And then you could trade that paper in for tangible things if you wanted. And at that point, you could argue that you were paid when you took your paper and bought a house, bought a car, whatever. But if you're sitting on a stack of paper right now, you are in jeopardy. Your savings that are in paper are in peril. Doesn't mean you have to convert all of your paper into something tangible. But look at it. How much are you stacking away for 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever, 3 years from now? You can keep that paper for what's going on in the next 60 days, 90 days, a year. Okay. But if you're saving, if you've got some of your savings that are earmarked for some point in the future, I cannot understand. I am unable to comprehend why you would want paper debt promises, why you'd want to store your wealth in these promises when everybody who looks at it, they can't be kept. Yours might. You might have a bond that they're going to honor 100%. It doesn't mean they're all going to fail, but most of them will. Huh? Why take the chance? Take your wealth, take your energy, take your life's productivity. Put it in something tangible. Put it into a payment, not a promise to pay, a payment. Gold, silver, payments. Payments. And to me, this is rational, it's logical, it's prudent. It's the sort of thing that once you get this, you look at it and you look and say, oh my gosh, you got to be crazy to hang on to paper. I mean, you have to have it. I get that, and for dealing with today's problems. But unless you think they can sustain this system indefinitely, if you want something to support yourself and your family on the other side of whenever the debt hits the fan, you want something then? You need a payment. You need to start stacking up those payments, not promises to pay, payments, because when the debt hits the fan, most of the promises are going to turn out to be worthless or substantially worthless. And if you've stored your wealth, whatever wealth you've stored in a form of paper, you're going to probably lose it. And you will not enjoy that loss. The wealth you've stored up in something tangible like gold, silver, now you got a chance. Now you got a chance. You could survive. You could even do well in a world where everybody else's wealth is stored in paper and therefore decimated. People who have tangible wealth, they might be able to do well. You might be able to get a house for next to nothing, a car, whatever. To me, it's just prudent to get some gold and silver. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.